Local News, Culture, and NPR.
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, cell phone ban. Students across New York State could soon be required to put their cell phones away during school hours under a new proposal announced by Governor Kathy Hochul. The plan is still subject to legislative approval, but it aims to limit smartphone usage in the classroom, during lunch, and even in school hallways starting as early as this fall. The initiative has already sparked a wave of reactions from educators and school administrators across the state, not to mention students. Patricia Rubio spoke with Liberty Central School District Superintendent Dr. Patrick Sullivan to gauge the local response to the plan. Local economic perspective from James B. Huntington today. We're talking tariffs and two local job fairs coming up. Plus, chamber chats with the Chamber of the Northern Poconos. And don't be trashy. Artists are invited to submit a design to the UDC.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Employees in Washington, D.C. who work for the U.S. Agency for International Development have been told to stay home today. NPR's Franco Ordonez reports tech billionaire Elon Musk has targeted the organization amid efforts to reform the federal government.
He definitely has big intentions here. He says Doge is in the process of specifically shutting down USAID, and he emphasizes that he could not do that without the support of the president. He actually said he went over it with Trump a few times. He asked him, was he sure? Musk didn't mention any statute or authority that would allow the president to basically skip Congress and shut down the agency unilaterally.
That's NPR's Franco Ordonez reporting. Businesses along the U.S. southern border say they're concerned about the 25% tariffs on Mexican imports that are set to take effect on Tuesday. Angela Cochurga from member station KTEP reports from El Paso.
The border is home to many manufacturers and supply chain businesses in both the U.S. and Mexico. The American automotive industry uses some parts that go back and forth across the border multiple times in building vehicles. U.S. businesses on the border also provide logistics, trucking, and warehousing services in this region. Jerry Pacheco, the CEO of the Border Industrial Association, says those businesses will feel the impact of tariffs.
They may not want to hire extra people until they see what the effect of tariffs is going to have. So it trickles completely through the supply chain.
Cross-border manufacturing in this region also includes U.S. companies that make consumer electronics as well as medical devices in Mexico. For NPR News, I'm Angela Cochurga in El Paso.
Stocks on Wall Street opened sharply lower this morning as investors try to assess the potential fallout from President Trump's new trade war. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow plummeted more than 600 points in early trading.
President Trump has ordered import taxes ranging from 10 to 25% on all goods coming into the U.S. from Mexico, Canada, and China. The tariffs are set to take effect tomorrow and could raise the price of imported liquor, lumber, and thousands of other products. Exports from the U.S. could also take a beating, as Canada and Mexico have promised to retaliate with tariffs of their own. Trump acknowledged the tariffs could cause some pain. He opted for a lower tax on Canadian crude oil in an effort to minimize the effect on gasoline prices. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce said in a statement that while Trump is right to focus on problems such as illegal drugs and immigration, tariffs are not the answer. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow was down 604 points. This is NPR News in Washington. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is scheduled to meet with President Trump at the White House today. Netanyahu is the first foreign leader to visit Trump since he took office last month. The two leaders are expected to discuss a wide range of issues, including the ceasefire in Gaza and negotiations aimed at the second phase of the agreement. North Korea is condemning Secretary of State Marco Rubio for branding it a rogue state and vowed an unspecified response. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports it marks Pyongyang's first official comments about the new Trump administration.
State media quoted the foreign ministry, which called Secretary Rubio's remarks a grave political provocation. The report was apparently in response to remarks Secretary Rubio made on the Megyn Kelly show. On the other hand, the report said that Rubio's remarks simply confirmed that U.S. policy towards North Korea remains hostile, and Pyongyang would have been more surprised if he had said anything favorable about it. The ministry also criticized U.S. plans for a new missile defense system, saying it would force the North to beef up its own military. Pyongyang has not responded to President Trump's suggestion that he's interested in trying to restart talks with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Seoul.
Emergency crews have been deployed to the Greek island of Santorini after a spike in seismic activity raised concerns about a potential earthquake. Officials say more than 200 underwater earthquakes have been recorded within the last several days. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include National Geographic Lindblad Expeditions, committed to taking travelers deeper into the wonders of planet Earth. Each expedition cruise is guided by a diverse team. NatGeoExpeditions.com/cruises.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Students across New York State may soon be required to put away their cell phones during school hours under a new proposal announced by Governor Kathy Hochul. The plan, which still needs approval from legislators in Albany, would take effect in the next academic year this fall and prohibit students from using their phones in class, during lunch, and even in hallways. Hochul argues that limiting smartphone access will help students stay focused in class and improve their mental health. Radio Catskill's Patricia Rubio spoke with Liberty Central School District Superintendent Dr. Patrick Sullivan about the proposed cell phone ban, beginning with his initial reaction upon hearing about it.
I understand the intent behind it, not in the totality of it, but I do understand that, you know, there are many studies out there that shows that cell phones create a distraction. There's items that, you know, with the communication throughout the day, that it could distract students from their, like I said, a distraction from the students from their work. Also, at times, students can use their cell phone during the day to message things that could hurt others, right? So there's been so many cyberbullying with the cell phones being the source. But having this blanket ban, I wonder, because, you know, in our schools currently, the elementary school, no cell phones during the day, the middle schools, no cell phones during the school day, and the high school is a little bit different. There is a procedure in place in the high school where the students can use their cell phones at lunch and break times and things of that nature. And in the classrooms, there's red tape put on, or just tape put on the desks where the students have to have their cell phones face down on that, on the tape on the desks to minimize distractions. Nothing is perfect. I know other school districts in the region that use the Yonder pouches and the other types of pouches. And again, no process is ever perfect. But most importantly, we want to make sure that we're minimizing distractions. And essentially, whatever policy or procedure we have in place, it has to be a collective commitment, right? So everyone has to ensure that they're implementing it. And I think that could be a challenge. And looking at some key points of, you know, the current proposal by our governor, right? It's, again, it's during the school day. There are some exceptions. There are students that may have health needs or other reasons to have a device on them to check their well-being or some components of their health. And then there's options for storage, right? So there's things of on-site storage. Lockers are considered that. But again, I believe there's some money for a set aside in this proposal by the governor's office for implementation of it, for purchasing storage devices. And interesting enough, it only prohibits use by students, not faculty and staff. They could still use their cell phones from the information I currently have.
Yeah, that was one of my questions, whether there is already a cell phone restriction in place within Liberty Schools. But you're saying there is in the elementary and also in the high school, not to the extent
middle
that
school,
the,
yes.
In the middle school, but not to the extent that Governor Hochul wants, which is a complete ban of the cell phones. How do you think this policy will impact students in Liberty Central School District? You mentioned some students have needs, special needs or special concerns that they may have to have the cell phone with them during school time. But how do you think this policy will affect students?
like any change, I think the students will be, and I had some conversations. We have a monthly student liaison meeting where I meet with a group of students from the high school and some from the middle school. And I meet with, and I haven't had a chance to speak to our young grade. So I meet with a group of elementary students on a monthly basis and fifth and sixth graders, which is the middle school junior liaison. And then we have 7 through 12 that meets with me as well. And we brought this up, and I think there's some discouragement because cell phones are part of everyone's lives. And I think the students are fearful in some ways, knowing that we have this process and not understanding why couldn't they have it at lunchtime, right? If it's not creating a disruption. And then, so I think depending on the students, again, you always have two sides to a situation. We have some students that are going to embrace this. And their families would, and others where they're going to have some reasons and concerns not to, right? In conversations we've had, some have brought up the idea or the notion in conversations in those meetings and others is, well, what happens if there's a safety situation I need to communicate with someone or other students or my family or whatever it is? So that creates a concern because I think many of us growing up is there was that one phone in the main office that people would have to use to contact their families. In the middle school and elementary school, it differs because there's no cell phones allowed throughout the day. But in high school, there's a difference. So again, I think there'll be some students that are upset. Other ones may feel rejoiced not to have to feel the desire or the need to continuously check who reached out to them via social media, text, and they can just focus on their schoolwork. So it's interesting to see how this transpires, how the reactions come about across the state. So it's going to be an interesting year or so, depending on how this proposal goes regarding Governor Hochul's proposal again to ban cell phones.
Yeah, you mentioned that one telephone that's in the office. I just took me back to when I went to school. You get the announcement over the loudspeaker and have them go down all the way down to the office just to have your parents call you, say, I'm going to pick you up or something. It's a different time now.
Yes, it is.
And so you got some feedback from the students. I know you say you were meeting with other students. Have you heard any feedback from the parents or staff about the idea of a cell phone ban?
I haven't had a chance to have those conversations with families just yet. We have some other conversations and we want to see how things will go. It is the law, right? So if it passes, then that's part of regulation. So that definitely will be something that we would have a community-based conversation about. We have reiterated our policies in our annual community forums. Have not had those. But I do know that, again, it varies just as our faculty and staff. It varies on how people feel for it. And I think it's similar to some of us are going to embrace this. Some of us are going to see this is additional challenge because cell phones has been adding another layer for classroom management, right? Because you like anything else, we have some students for whichever reasons may be will comply with the request to put the cell phone away, and other ones may not. This does help us saying, "Hey, this is the law; we have to do this," and gives a more understanding why for many of our students. And as we know, students throughout their teenage years always questions the why behind things, and we'll have an explanation so that can help things run more efficiently. But again, it varies on person to person. I'm pretty sure, and this is just, I haven't had any conversations with the faculty and staff yet, but I'm sure a majority of them will be quite pleased that there would be something that could help minimize distractions within the classroom and something with the intent of keeping the children engaged in their learning.
You mentioned before that schools will receive funding from the state to implement this, but do you see it impacting, do you think this policy could impact the district's budget in any way?
I'm not sure yet. Yeah, that's what it's mentioned, that they're looking at proposing that, and that's more of putting funds for that could be there for schools. I guess everything is preliminary, and then having conversation where for those what's called those yonder pouches and those other pouches. There's certain ways of doing that. So I'm not sure. We'll have to look and see because I don't think even if there's nothing provided in the end, there's ways that, you know, we have lockers. So there's ways that districts can still have a storage device or an item, a place where the phones can be stored. I don't foresee that it would really, it doesn't have to have any budgetary implications for next year, but it could. So I'm not sure yet, depending on what's finalized and how the legislation and the regulation reads, I would think, on how that could impact some things.
Is there any sort of alternative ways that Liberty Schools are addressing distractions and mental health concerns without restricting cell phone access?
We have multiple layers of support for students, right? In some of the educational conversations we have, and something called multi-tiered systems of support. So we have different levels. So we have our tier one, what every child needs. We have our tier two, where some more get, and then a few who have the most needs. So we follow our processes. We have a very strong, productive, caring school counseling teams and clinical teams, our psychologists and social workers that are always monitoring the students and working with our administration. We also use an SE, a social emotional learning screener that students take and the faculty and staff complete as well. So we can have another perspective, another idea or a data point to see what children need. So this is a very important piece of our work, right? The social emotional well-being. Many of the indifferences among students stem from something dealing with social media, let it be via their cell phones or their personal computers or devices outside of school. But we always try to take steps to help mediate and provide the students to learn how to conduct themselves not only in school, but in the digital world as well. Specifically, it's a term that's been used for a long time with digital citizenship. So looking at ways to reinforce that for our students, and we do that at every situation we can. Sometimes they are, you know, proactive sessions or lessons, and sometimes they're reactive, depending on the situation at hand, where our counselors, our teachers, our support staff are always willing to help our students learn on how to navigate through this world, because the cell phones, the technology is something that they have to utilize, they have to live with beyond the walls of Liberty. It's always an ongoing learning experience that we have to provide for our students.
Dr. Sullivan, is there anything else that we have not touched on? Do you want our listeners to know about the cell phone ban or at Liberty?
No, I think we've covered everything. I just want to thank you for this opportunity again to have this discussion. And if there's any other items you wish to discuss, I'm more than happy to have these conversations and just explain what's happening at Liberty.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sullivan. I do really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
And we'll take a break. And when we come back, local economic perspective from local economist and author James B. Huntington. This is Radio Catskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, why are penicillin allergies so often misdiagnosed?
A whole generation of doctors were trained thinking that penicillin allergy was very dangerous.
And what other medical myths do we still believe?
Future generations will ask themselves, what was Grandpa thinking of?
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, there's Mambo at the Mocambo, Les Baxter Goes Latin, and we'll hear Tiki Lounge TV themes. Daryl Brogdon here. Join me where the music is shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, the New York Times is reporting that major U.S. stock indexes are falling at the start of trading this morning, with the S&P 500 down roughly 1.5% and the tech-heavy NASDAQ about 1.8% lower. President Trump's tariffs are sending shockwaves throughout markets around the world. What's going on? Well, let's get some local economic perspective from a local economist and author James B. Huntington, who joins us every Monday. Good morning, James B.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Well, James B., it looks like these tariffs are sending some shockwaves. What do we know about what's going on, besides what I just told you in the U.S.?
Well, the Europe and Asia exchanges did drop overnight, expectedly, with these things now being scheduled to actually come into effect. Right now, I'm looking at the market indices that are on about a 10-minute delay, but the most current ones we have. So the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 600 and some for the day, and NASDAQ is down about 400. So it may not get any worse than that because the story is already in, but yeah, it will be certainly a down day because tariffs are not good for business.
Yeah, and I think that we've been hearing about this, but just to remind folks again, tariff is a duty imposed upon goods that are imported in. So that tax or that duty goes to the business first, and then the business decides whether or not they're going to eat it or pass it on to consumers. And more than likely, they'll probably pass it on to consumers.
Well, when China was stuck with tariffs from the U.S. during the first Trump term, almost everybody did pass it along to consumers. I can understand why some would sweep it under the rug, a.k.a. eat it, but these can go on indefinitely, and no one knows really how long they'll last. They could be 4 years or longer, so businesses are not going to be well prepared to just keep their prices the same. It's a part of their cost structure. It's increasing the cost of things that they sell, and they're going to have to recover it.
And President Trump yesterday acknowledged that these tariffs could, quote, cause some pain, but he's insisted that they're not going to substantially increase prices for Americans and that the countries will bear the brunt. But it is likely that some goods would increase, the cost would increase in grocery aisles, cars, electronics.
Whatever's being imported, whatever's subject to these tariffs, it's going to go up because of the tariffs. And inflation is not nothing anyway, so he can't just say this isn't going to happen. He can give his own good faith expectation, but he can't control that, obviously.
So it remains to be seen what pain will we endure. These tariffs are set to go into effect, I guess, tomorrow. What happened, speaking of inflation, what happened to the Fed's preferred inflation measure last week?
Well, that was a little higher than before. It came in at 2.6%. Oh, excuse me here. Let me get the right thing.
Okay.
It went up. It's 2.6% in December, faster than the 2.4% in November. It's 2.8% after they remove few food and fuel costs, which went up less. So it's been in the twos, in the high twos, actually, for a long time. So it isn't much of a change, but it does tell us that inflation is not making a beeline to 2% or anything like that. And it's another reason why interest rates are not going to go down soon.
Yeah, so what happened with interest rates last week?
And indeed, as was expected, as almost everybody expected, the Federal Reserve left rates unchanged this past Wednesday at their last meeting. There was really no doubt about that. It's like Chairman Powell said that the levels they're at now are weighing on growth. They are having a significant effect, but there's no reason for them to go down more. We have every reason. As I said last week, not only the tariffs, but the executive orders we've had in this presidency so far point toward interest rates going high. So I'm fairly sure that interest rates will go up before they go down.
And what do you think the interest rate policy from the Fed means for our finances, for, you know, everybody's finances?
Well, looking over a rundown of the loan rates and such things, let's see, new car rates have been going down a little bit, but car prices are still high, meaning that cancels out a lot of the effect of that. It's a 6.6% average in December, which is down from the 0.5% over the past year, but almost the same as it was 2 years ago. So we have 10.8% as an average used car loan, which is down 0.6% from a year, but it's up from December of 2022. Credit card interest, if you are unfortunate enough to be paying those, they are over 20% average now. They're so high, they don't seem to have much to do with the prime rate or anything else these days. So there are credit cards that are through smaller banks or credit unions that tend to have smaller rates, but mainly if you're carrying credit card balances, unless you're short of higher pay that you can see in the next year or two or something, you should look for a way of getting rid of that because it's darn expensive. Mortgages, 7.8% late last year. They were as low as a hair over 6% as recently as this past September. But we've got concerns.
Oh, looks like we lost James B. there. We will take a quick break and get him back on the line so we can get some more economic perspective. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hi, this is Marco Werman, host of The World. Weekdays at 3, our newsroom connects you with events around the globe. Our reporters in the Americas, Africa, Europe, and Asia get to the heart of the day's news. We bring you international perspectives on issues worldwide and here in the U.S. It's 1 hour each day that broadens horizons and takes you beyond our borders. Join me on The World, afternoons at 3, on Radio Catskill.
Do you ever wonder how much of your life is driven by chance?
Every little decision you make, whether to leave the house now or in 5 minutes, changes the kinds of people you'll meet that day, the conversations you'll have, and those ripple effects emanate throughout our lives.
Embracing the randomness of life. It's the latest in our Wellness 2.0 series, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 1 on Radio Catskill.
We're having a little trouble getting James B. back on the line, but we'll get him in a little bit. Meanwhile, last week, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem joined Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents in New York City at 3 locations, 2 in the Bronx and 1 in Manhattan. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump's administration tried to institute a funding freeze on a wide range of federal grants and loans. A federal judge blocked that action last week. Jason Dole spoke to Jasmine Gripper, co-director of the New York Working Families Party, to talk more about Trump's policies and reflect on his first days in office.
We see Kristi Noem coming to New York, putting on her ice vest, her hair like freshly done and makeup well put on. And we see Trump administration treating our policy and people's lives like it's a reality TV show full of theatrics. And it's such a distraction from what he's really trying to do and all the harm he's causing. And so like his, you know, as that's happening, we see executive orders attempting to freeze federal aid which would have had a huge impact on New Yorkers, from SNAP benefits to Head Start programs to Section 8 vouchers for housing. The Trump administration really putting themselves at odds with the people of New York. And then you see New York's leadership, or you don't see New York's leadership, taking bold action. And, you know, the governor being really soft-spoken and, like, the mayor of New York City being completely absent. We are so grateful that we at least have a public advocate who has been the only leader in New York who's been taking on Trump and ready to fight him. And thanks to her quick thinking and her quick action, along with other AGs, they were able to put a stop to Trump's horrible executive order. Trump is sowing chaos. The Democratic Party still hasn't figured out a response. And yet working people, everyday people, are the ones who are caught in the crosshair. And that we can't be distracted by the spectacle he makes. We have to be focused on protecting one another and making sure we have what we need, not just to survive, but to also to thrive.
On the first point that you're reacting to, the ICE raids, but more specifically, Kristi Noem coming and participating and demonstrating this, and you likened it to a reality TV show, saying basically using, you know, real people and real lives instead of tackling the issue, looking at it like it's a reality show. I think I would say, like, you know, the old euphemisms, political football, you know. But these are folks that came to power because, in no small part, because they're willing to treat this issue as a political football and score points with it. That's part of how they got where they are. This seems to be all part of the plan.
Yeah, I mean, this is a lot of what was laid out in Project 2025. I think, you know, Democrats have a larger problem in their hand. Yes, there was Trump's election and him winning the popular vote. But why that happened was because a lot of Democrats stayed home, not because a lot of Democrats decided to support Trump. And so when you really look at the numbers from the last election, Trump picked up, you know, maybe close to 200,000 votes in New York. But what actually happened was, like, Harris got about 900,000 fewer votes than Biden. And Democrats overwhelmingly stayed home. People are looking for real leadership. They're looking for bold leadership, and they're looking for real solutions. And I think the Democrats being silent or being too quiet and not taking on Trump or not having solutions or plans leaves them vulnerable for Trump to continue his reign of terror. If we want to switch up things in the midterms, if we want a different outcome in 4 years, we have to start building towards that now, and we have to start moving towards real solutions. And so we've seen Kathy Hochul even shift this year. She started out with her State of the State talking about the affordability crisis. The Working Families Party has been talking about that for years and trying to get the state to address the affordability crisis. We heard Kathy Hochul talk about putting money in people's pockets. And we're like, wow, literally we've been talking about putting money back in people's pockets. And then she lays out proposals that are not bold. And the reality of her proposals don't match her rhetoric. And I think people are tired of politicians who have rhetoric and don't match it up with reality. And so when she says universal child care, she should make universal free child care and not half-assed attempts to get us there. When she says she's going to, you know, do the enhanced child tax credit, which is actually a really good proposal, but an even better proposal is the working families tax credit. When she says we need to have affordable housing but doesn't actually lay out a plan to get us there, we have plans to get us build more affordable housing, increase housing access vouchers for people, the Tenants Opportunity to Purchase Act. There are real solutions on the table that, like, WFP champions in the legislature have been fighting for years. It's time to make them a reality. And so I think Democrats really need to respond with bold solutions, bold ideas, and a bold commitment to the working class, because that's who they lost in the November election.
How do we act? Because we have to act in response to the news of the day without purely reacting, you know, reacting in a way that is basically being manipulated or jumping in a knee-jerk type reaction. We have to act. We have to respond. We have to plan for the well-being of our organizations or our communities. But at the same time, you don't want to be, you know, fooled into overreacting. Well, how do you draw that line? How are we supposed to thread this needle?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We need a plan. New York needs a plan to deal with Trump. We know we are vulnerable. We know he's vindictive. But we also know New York has more billionaires and millionaires than any place on the planet. And we have a massive budget that's on par with other countries. And there's a way that New York can sustain itself through this crisis and to be less vulnerable. And so we see Kathy Hochul, one, refusing to even name Trump. So I'm like, are you fighting against him or not? Are you going to mount up a defense? We see her also saying, oh, I don't want to raise taxes. And that's not a signal to you and I or working class people who are paying taxes. That's a signal to the ultra rich that she's trying to protect them. And I think this is a moment when we can say to the rich in New York, hey, we need you to pay a little bit more. Just a small amount more can create enough wealth for New York to shore up our budget, to make sure we can be more sustainable and we can have a plan to help keep New Yorkers housed, to keep New Yorkers safe, and to make sure New Yorkers have what they need. It would be a catastrophe for our state if people who were relying on Section 8 vouchers all of a sudden lost those vouchers and ended up on our streets. It would be a catastrophe for our children if Head Start programs all of a sudden closed their doors. We need to have a plan. We need a leader in the state who is proactive and is willing to take on Trump. We are grateful that Tish is like ready and willing and able and to do advocacy through the courts. We know that's going to be necessary throughout this entire administration. While also we need to shore up our budget. New York is actually in a healthy budget right now. We have a surplus. And part of that surplus is because we raised taxes on the ultra rich a few years ago. And the billionaires in New York are only getting richer. they're only getting wealthier while the rest of us are still struggling. And so we need our state leaders while they're doing the state budget right now to actually take up raising revenue and making sure that we have the resources to protect New York and to keep us safe and sustain us through this vulnerable time.
So just to make sure that people are aware of the Working Families Party, but more specifically, I'm curious, what leverage do you have? How are you approaching things on the ground in New York? Are there Working Family Parties, you know, representatives in Albany? And if not, how are you, you know, leveraging any kind of advocacy that you're trying to accomplish in Albany? Where is the Working Families Party right now?
Yeah, New York State Working Families Party is all across the state. We have chapters, we have leaders and members all across New York, and we are building political power for and by the people. We are the political party of workers, of nurses, of teachers, of students, of tenants. That is who the Working Families Party is. We have been around for 25 years. We are literally a political party with a line on the ballot. So when you go to vote, you'll see Democrat, Republican, conservative, and working families. And because of fusion voting in New York, a candidate can appear on more than one line. And so Republicans tend to run on the Republican and conservative line. Democrats tend to run on the Democratic and maybe the Working Families Party line. But they have to ask and seek our endorsement, and that usually comes with commitment. So when candidates seek the endorsement of the Working Families Party, they have to complete our questionnaire. They have to come in before our chapters, answer our questions, you know, make commitments, and we vet them. Are they actually committed to fighting on behalf of working families people? Are they committed to fighting against the ultra rich? Are they committed to making people's lives easier and better? And if they say yes, and we're values aligned, they get the endorsement. For many Democrats, they are seeking that party line, especially if they're in a purple district. It can be the difference between winning and losing. We saw it in the battleground congressional districts where they flipped from blue to red 4 years ago. And this year they flipped back to blue when the working families line was in play. They were more likely to win. And so candidates do compete and contend to be Working Families Party champions. And so we are in Albany. We have a state-led team. I'm based in Albany myself. We convene elected officials on a regular basis, and we strategize about how to move our agenda through the state legislature. And at the same time, our chapters, our members, and our leaders are engaging in advocacy, whether it's directly lobbying their elected official, whether it's participating in an advocacy day and showing up at the Capitol, are making phone calls to community members or to elected officials. We are doing it all. And so we are an advocacy group. We are electoral powerhouse, and we have been around for 25 years and growing in power. We're going to contend in executive races across the state this year. So the New York City mayoral, the Albany mayoral race, the Buffalo mayoral race, potentially Syracuse. We haven't made up our mind yet. We might play in that race as well. And so we have WFP champions across the spectrum who are from the local city council to their county boards to state ledge and to even statewide races. And so we will continue to build our electoral power. Our goal is to win governing power, right? That WFP champions are not only have a seat at the table, but they are the ones controlling the table. So we're growing our majorities and our number of electeds in the Assembly and the Senate every year. And we hope to have a majority soon. So Democrats have a majority, but we want working families champions to be the majority of those in those houses as well. Right. And we think we can get there.
What are you guys looking at from the Working Families Party? What would you advise people to keep an eye out for just in terms of issues or actions that you're concerned about that you want New Yorkers to be aware of and be prepared for?
Yeah, if you are not plugged in, look for the Working Families Party. Go to our website. Follow us on all the social medias to stay up to date on all of our actions, our events. We will move in real time. As threats become real, we will mobilize and protect our people. We will hit the streets when we have to. And we will also use the levers of government to make sure we're protecting New Yorkers. And so stay tuned and stay connected. We're approaching this fight as defense and offense. We have to protect past wins. We have to protect each other, and we will do that. And we also need to win things to help working people, like the Working Families Tax Credit, universal child care, and affordable housing. And we'll be advancing that agenda in Albany. And so there's lots of work to do, and we just need more people to continue to work with us to get it done. And so anyone who considers themselves a progressive or just wants to fight for their community should plug into the Working Families Party and get connected to a local chapter in your area.
New York Working Families Party co-director Jasmine Gripper, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to Jason Dole for that. And it looks like we got James B. Huntington back on the line. James, how are you?
Yes, I'm here.
Sorry for the delay there. We don't know what happened with the gremlins on the phone line here, but we were talking about some inflation measures and interest rates and tariffs. But let's talk about some local things that are going on with some job fairs. There are two job fairs in Northeast Pennsylvania coming up.
Yes, one is the Pike County Workforce Development Agency. It's going to be actually on Tuesday, April 1st from 10 to 2. At the Best Western Inn in Matamoros. So they are looking for employers also. But last time there were 350 job seekers there, so it should be big also. The other one is this week, this Thursday. It's the Western Wayne School District Educational Support System Job Fair. This will be at the Western Wayne Administration Building in Lake Ariel. It'll be from 11 to 2. There's a possible sign-on bonus for people who take jobs. They're looking for substitutes for teachers, paraprofessionals, nurses, custodians, secretaries, and food services. So they really do want to hire at this. So if you see yourself working any of these positions, come out this Thursday.
And we got a little preview about what was going on with the stock market this morning, but what else is going on with the numbers, oil, precious metal, all those prices? What's going on?
Well, we have, as of very early this morning, gold at $27.98, which is up $37. It's a good gaining week. It's an all-time high or close to that. That's up about another $20 today so far. Silver, $31.04, up 79 cents. The ratio is 90 to 1. It caught up some. That's down about 20 cents today so far. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 44,545 for the week, plus 121. That's dwarfed by the 600 and some loss, which is still holding so far today. NASDAQ, 19,627, dropped 327 over the past week to add to the 400 so far today. So NASDAQ is not happy either. It wasn't last week and it isn't today. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $73.97, down 42 cents. That's helpful. That held its loss, actually, last week, so that might be more important than the small loss this time. Bitcoin, $95,812. That's down about $3,000. A losing week. It may rebound. It just bounces up and down all over the place. British pound, 1.2311, down 1.6 cents. That gave back almost half of last week's gain. The euro, 1.0243, down 2.35 cents. It gave back about 80% of last week's gain. Japanese 100 yen, which is just bouncing in the mid-60s, dropped a penny to 64 cents. Overall, the DeepSeek situation that has dragged NASDAQ greatly down may reverse itself. There are indications that it's the super low cost of training its AI products might be very low if they stole data from other companies. That's being researched now. So it's possible the AI component, so to speak, of stocks
will go right back to where it was 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Well, keeping an eye on it as always, James B. Huntington. Got a little intermission there with our talk today, but thanks for being there and keeping an eye on the economy, local economic perspective every Monday from our local economist and author, James B. Huntington. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living.
And we'll take a break, and when we come back, the Upper Delaware Council is a call for artists to help with their litter sweep t-shirt, and we'll reveal the theme right after this. It's Radio Chatskill.
This is Cruiser R. Grace, KG, right here in the place to be, WJFF Radio Catskills Music Emporium, Tuesday night, 7 to 9. 2 hours of great music, jazz, funk, blues. I got mellow grooves to help you unwind, exciting rhythms to help you cut loose. Join me Tuesday night for the Music Emporium, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Upper Delaware Council, or UDC, is calling on both amateur and professional artists to participate in a design contest for the 2025 Upper Delaware Litter Sweep. It's for their commemorative t-shirt. And the theme for this year's design is, wait for it, don't be trashy. Here to tell us more is Stephanie Driscoll, Program Director for the UDC. Hello.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
So I like the theme. Tell us a little bit about this message and what you're trying to convey with the litter sweep event.
Yeah, we are trying to prevent litter before it gets there. Yeah. So we've tried to figure out how to do that. And I think that this year, inviting artists to come in and give their interpretation on Don't Be Trashy, which is so fun. We're excited to see what we get. And hopefully this will help prevent, you know, the litter before it even happens. Yeah.
Now, did you have a call for artists for t-shirts before? Is this the first time you've done it? What's inspired this?
Yeah, this is the first time. We've had local artists in the past that we've reached out to and have been so generous to donate their time and artwork. But we're opening it up to artists of all ages and backgrounds, and we're hoping to get fun submissions. And we've got a couple so far, so we're hoping for tons and tons of submissions.
So you've gotten a good response so far.
Yeah.
Are you seeing a good number of artists submitting designs, or is it still the early stages here?
We're still in the early stages for sure. Uh-huh. So, and you know, we live in a last minute world. So we're hoping to get a bunch by the deadline, which is February 14th.
February 14th, Valentine's Day. Yes. Tell us a little bit more about the submissions guidelines. What are you specifically looking for in terms of like creativity and execution?
Yeah. So there people are allowed to use up to 4 colors. We don't want it to be too much for our t-shirt, the production company, yeah, which is Platform Industries in Honesdale. And they sent over to us. We don't need our logo in the design itself. We do put that on the t-shirt, and just keep in mind that it is going to be on a safety color. So we will choose the colors to
bright.
Go with the design.
Yeah.
It's going to be bright.
Yeah.
So we need to see those people out there on the road picking litter. So.
And the Litter Sweep is a yearly event, a big community event every through the month of April, right? It goes through the whole month, is
that
right?
Yeah, we used to do a week or two, but we're opening it up this year for the whole month.
Okay.
Just more options.
And let's talk about like why it's so important, in the Delaware River corridor and what you hope to get from community involvement on both sides of the river.
Yeah, last year was super successful, and it has been. It's been growing every year since. But we want to clean up. This is our beautiful corridor, and we want to keep it beautiful. And we've had such great volunteers throughout the years, and we're excited this year to see how many more people come out. It seems like we get more kids involved each year, so that's exciting.
And, you know, we live in such a beautiful space, and I think that we're all aware of being stewards of the land here, but maybe I'm not blaming the visitors, but I'm still surprised by, like, there's still trash along the roadway. I just don't understand it.
It doesn't, and that's kind of where that theme, don't be trashy.
Or the river, yeah.
You know, let's try to prevent it before it gets there, and yeah, see if we can figure it out.
Be a little bit more environmentally responsible.
Yes.
So in addition to the design contest, are there other ways that people can contribute to the 5th Annual Upper Delaware Litter Sweep?
Of course. We always take donations of cash or check. So you are more than welcome to drop those off whenever you want. But you can also sign up to be a litter leader in your town or township. And we're hoping to get litter leader promises by February 28th. So that's
okay, so that can be found. That information is on the website.
Yes, everything is on. Info. Yes, everything is on our website at Upper Delaware Council, on our Facebook and Instagram, and you are more than welcome to email me at Stephanie@UpperDelawareCouncil.org for contest rules or submissions or any information on the litter sweep at all. I'm here.
The t-shirt design submissions due on the 14th.
Yes.
And then if you want to be a litter leader, and I think you had a pretty good response last year.
Oh, we had a great response. Yeah. We had multiple people in different towns.
Like different townships. Towns. And yeah, it's so great to see people out doing that too. That's the 28th.
Yes.
February, that deadline. And then in April, the whole month long.
That's when we're doing it.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the litter sweep month. We've got Earth Month going on.
Thanks for reminding us to not be trashy. Stephanie Driscoll is from the Upper Delaware Council. And again, that t-shirt design contest is coming up. And get more information at the website or the Facebook page. Thank you so much.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, Chamber Chats with the Chamber of the Northern Poconos. That's coming up after a break. This is Radio Chats. Go.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, there's Mambo at the Mocambo, Les Baxter Goes Latin, and we'll hear Tiki Lounge TV themes. Daryl Brogdon here. Join me where the music is shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast, a newly renovated farmhouse that sleeps four with full gourmet cooked breakfast provided daily, located near the top of Hauk Mountain Road in the town of Walton. More information at greatwesterncatskills.com.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, as part of our ongoing series, Chamber Chats, we check in with the Chamber of the Northern Poconos. And today it's Membership and Marketing Director Sabrina Edwards to tell us about a first-time event that's coming up. Sabrina, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you for being here. You guys have a Women in Business event that's coming up. Tell us about this. It's the first one, right?
Yes. So our Women in Business, program has been in the works for quite some time. And this year, the membership committee really came together to really put this in fruition. We are calling it WIN, standing for Women In, because each quarter is going to be a different topic. This one coming up is going to be geared to women in marketing.
And who is the speaker that's going to be at the first Women in Business luncheon that's coming up on the 13th? Is that right?
Yeah, the 13th. So it's going to be Jill Kallenberg. She is the president of Marketing Management Solutions. She is a newer member of the chamber and has really taken full advantage of everything we had to offer and is getting really involved.
And how can folks get more information or attend this first Women in Business luncheon?
They can go online to northernpoconos.org or they can call in the office and I'll be happy to guide them through.
And in addition to that, you guys have a couple of other events coming up. I think you've got a President's Day brunch coming.
I do believe that is through a member of ours. So one of the many cool things with our website is that if you are a member of the chamber, you have the opportunity to actually post your events on our website.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm looking at here. Yeah. So, yeah, it is going to be at the Emporium table. Also, though, you guys are working on your visitors guide for 2025. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yep. So that is kind of our guide that gets printed about like 11,000 copies. That is our kind of go-to book for everything you need to know within this Northern Pocono region. That gets distributed around many visitor centers, many businesses, et cetera. We even get calls from people in the city wanting those visitors guides and all the listings in there, and 99% of the ads in there are, you know, chamber members. So you're getting that advertising as well around the tri-state area.
And when is the deadline for folks that want to be in the guide?
Well, the deadline is March 7th for full payment of everything. So I would suggest anyone listening who is a member, and if you become a new member, you actually get an exclusive discount for an ad in there. So I would say the first week of March is the deadline.
And, you know, folks can become a member, as you said. And just a little bit about it, it's the Chamber of the Northern Poconos. You guys really focus on Wayne, Pike Counties, that Northeast PA section right there, right?
Yeah.
And what are some of the other benefits for folks in that area that, you know, are attractive to them to be members of this chamber?
I would say if you are looking for that in-person connection feel, if you're looking to get, you know, more out there within the community and get more involved with this area, I would say joining this chamber especially is where you'd want to be if you want to get that, you know, connection. We're big on community and just really supporting each other as a whole for this region.
And you guys even have a junior leadership program too.
We do. So that is actually going on right now. I do believe the graduation for that is this coming June. And then this fall, we start the adult leadership program. So anyone interested, even if you're not a member of the chamber and your business would like to support you in learning leadership and taking those classes, applications for that are opening up soon.
All right. And again, that Women in Marketing event, the Chamber's first Women in Business Luncheon with Jill Kallenberg, is going to be coming up on the 13th, Galentine's Day, I think that's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
In order to get there, you're looking for registration and you want folks to register by what, Thursday? This Thursday?
Yes. So registration closes this coming Thursday at noon, and we need to give that headcount and spaces are, you know, piling up. We are limiting this to 50 attendees, and we are currently at 35, so hoping to get the last few in there.
All right. That's great. We've been talking to Sabrina Edwards. She is the Chamber of Northern Poconos Membership and Marketing Director, and there's more information about that Women in Business Luncheon and other news and info about the Chamber of the Northern Poconos at their website, northernpoconos.org. Sabrina, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder, you can find this program and all of our local programs at our website, wjffradio.org. And while you're there, you can also sign up to receive our weekly newsletter. It comes out every Friday. You can sign up there to get the latest local news and information that's happening here at Radio Catskill in your inbox. Just go to wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, independent grassroots global news. Our reporting includes breaking daily news headlines and in-depth interviews with people on the front lines of the world's most pressing issues. People speaking for themselves, providing unique and sometimes provocative perspectives on global events. Democracy Now!, weekdays at noon, right here on Radio Catskill.
I'm Maria Hinojosa this week on Latino USA, a one-on-one sit-down with Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a.k.a. AOC. We're going to talk about how she plans on resisting Trump's policies, what she thinks of the future of the Democratic Party, and so much more. That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, partly cloudy skies this morning, giving way to some occasional showers in the afternoon. Today's temperatures much warmer than yesterday, a high near 40. Tonight, overcast with a slight change of a slight chance of a rain shower, low of 28. Tomorrow, sunny in the morning with increasing clouds in the afternoon and windier. Some wind gusts could occasionally get over 40 miles an hour, high 31. And looking ahead later in the week, we are looking, keeping our eye on an impactful winter storm that could bring a risk for some icy mix in the forecast. That's later this week, and we'll keep you posted on that.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.